With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, Dad.
Grace.
Why are you covered in dog hair?
Well, because I've been carrying the dog.
Oh, the doggy.
I know, because you've got a bad leg.
Bad leg, Sky.
Well, I may have dog hair. Why are you sitting here with a bloody towel around you and towel around your head?
Because I've been fake tanning.
Well, it's disgusting. Last week I had Anthony Scaramucci with his Botox and his bloody dyed hair, and now you've got your fake tan. What are you on a fake tan for?
So I look nice. It's been a long year. It's been a long year, and you've got to give people their small fixes when they can get them.
Okay, yeah.
I like to fake tan, so I look about 0.2 times prettier.
Okay, I don't really have anything like that, do I?
No, it's because you are just a lost cause.
Oh, yeah.
So, actually, speaking of which, lots of women do fancy you, don't they?
They do. Yeah, they do. Yeah.
That was a caveat.
Not a caveat, it was a link.
It was a segue.
You want me to talk about Nicola?
Yeah.
Not Sturgeon?
Not Sturgeon.
Nicola Padgett, yeah. You were really shocked by that, weren't you?
No.
So I'll just tell people briefly the story. Nicola Padgett was a very famous actress. And when we were in opposition and then when I was in government, for years and years and years, she was bipolar. And when she was manic, she genuinely believed she and I were having a relationship. I've never met her in my life. And I actually looked them out the other day. I've got them loads of them upstairs. She sent me hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of letters and pictures. And the thing was, somebody who worked for me in the office was really sort of freaked out by it and said, you've got to tell the police. But I sort of sensed something really nice about her in the letters, and I sensed a sort of really gentle, troubled soul. So I never did. But actually her husband, because she was married, she's got family, and at one point her husband, you know, she sent me stuff that he was saying about me, and I ended up having a conversation with him. Said, look, there's nothing I can do about this. It's not me. Anyway, she died.
Yes.
And so it was all out in the obituaries. And she wrote a book called The Diamonds Behind My Eyes, and I was the stranger. So it's quite a weird feeling. It is quite a weird feeling, but I never, ever felt threatened like, you might do by...
Do you think that's because she was a woman? If it was a man with that level of obsession with you?
No, I think... No,
I think it's because you know it was mental illness.
Yeah, no, I sort of sensed it was mental illness, and also...
But a lot of this stuff is mental illness.
That's true, but look, I have had blokes that are obsessed.
I know, and you deal with it in different ways.
Yeah, but no, I think with... there was a guy in court this week for a really horrible bloody thing.
Don't freak me out even more. My anxiety's too high.
Okay. But I think that... No, I just sensed it was kind of fine. And, I must say there was one really funny moment. Right. Do you know who Min Campbell is?
No.
Min Campbell is leader of the Liberal Democrats, okay? Member of Parliament, Scottish guy. And one day he came into my office and said, I think these are meant for you. And she had quite scrawly handwriting, and some of the letters had gone to him, including one that had a pair of knickers in it.
Oh, my God, yeah, wow. Yeah. So he thought you were having an affair?
With this lady was. With
famous the actress.
Yeah.
Wow, so everyone thought you were a big don in Parliament because you were getting sent knickers, like a rock star.
Grace, I know that you and your mother find it very, very odd, but I think you'll find that quite a lot of women find me very, very attractive.
I don't find that odd necessarily. I find it gross, but I find it more funny that Mum just doesn't care.
I know.
That's my favourite thing ever. If I if my partner, if women fancied my partner, I would go and find those women and punish them severely. But mum couldn't give less of a shit.
I know.
When women fancy you. And that's what I love about mum so much.
Well, I love lots of things about mum as well. But she did get a little bit edgy about the Diana stuff at times.
Yeah, but that's because that's Princess Diana. That's a different league of someone. But also, that's because you just do it to egg her on.
Even that, to be honest, she was quite...
What, jealous?
Well, no, she was quite not jealous. Like, we had these dinners, and this dinner once where...
The thing is, if Princess Diana fancied my partner, I'd just be like, well, I give up.
Well...
Because I've got no chance.
No, but what was funny was, even then, though, like, she was like... Mum was like, as this dinner where, I'm not lying, Diana was a bit all over me, right? excuse me. And as we left, Mum was just like, oh, you are pathetic. Said you like a teenager's pathetic.
But what's most funny about me, so I've been in social situations with you and Mum, and a woman will be flirting with you. And I'll say to Mum, do you want me to go over there and say something? Like, that's bang out of order. And she's like, Grace, she can have him. So anyway, Lady Di is a sort of good next segue into what we talk about a lot this week on the podcast, which is obviously Harry, Meghan and the Oprah interview. And obviously there are rumours within the Campbell Miller family that Harry is a member the family.
You just
what are you talking about? You've always said Harry was my brother.
Oh, shut up, Grace.
You
I've
do.
Never, ever said that.
You always say that.
Grace, you say...
Okay, he's going to punish me, so I'm just going to say that was not a joke, but I'll say it was a lie, just because otherwise he'll get angry at me. Anyway, so this week on the podcast, we talk a lot about Harry and Meghan. Our guest is... This is such a fun podcast. I loved editing it. I loved listening to it. I didn't know how much you worked with Aisha on the Ed Miliband campaign. I had no idea of any of those stories. So I loved hearing about all of that.
She does do a good Ed Miliband.
She does the... honestly, to this podcast just for her impression of Ed Miliband.
Grace, I thought that we didn't announce the guest until we...
I know, but this is just a lovely little natural conversation.
Aisha Hazarika, isn't it?
And the guest is Aisha Hazarika. Thank you. Well, can I start? Because we wanted to sort of start by talking about Harry and Meghan, didn't we? The huge cultural moment that was the interview that aired while we're recording this on Tuesday, the 9th of March. It aired last night in the UK. Did you watch it live, Aisha, or had you seen it before?
No, I did save it up to watch it live. And even though I did see a lot of clips during the day yesterday from obviously the American debut of it, I was kind of thinking it might be a bit flat. You know, when you see a film and the trailer, you've seen all the best bit in the trailers, I sort of thought it might be. But I thought it was very powerful. I was quite surprised. I thought it was quite moving, very shocking, some real reveals. And for me, what was interesting is Meghan normally is like the star, and I actually think she was quite muted, which I do understand. I think Harry had a really big moment last night. I think we kind of really saw Harry go from that wee boy we saw behind his mother's funeral cortege. Then we had him being this wild child and sort of all over the place. And I think last night you actually did see somebody who was properly grown up and a kind of adult man and a family man and had a sense of mission. I think you sort of really saw him grow up and saw so much of his mum in him last night. So I thought it was quite a big moment for him.
Did you? No, you've done stuff with both of them.
No, I've only done stuff with him.
Okay, so you've done stuff with Harry, as have I, and I've done stuff with William as well. Do you think that if sometimes what happens with these people in the media world, that because you do stuff with them and because you like them when you do that stuff, that you sort of feel you have to defend them more and that we all tend to want to take sides, and that do you feel you're taking sides with Meghan and Harry against whoever is there against, whether that's the media, whether that's against the royal family, whoever it might be?
So I don't think I did in the beginning, because I don't think I was hugely that bothered about them either way. And I hadn't always been very complimentary about Harry. I did think he was a bit of a kind of frat boy idiot when, you know, he was growing up and stuff.
And dressing up as a Nazi.
That's not so good, right? It's not quite my vibe.
No, but it's not a good vibe.
It's not a good vibe. But I have to say, I just have become a bit more interested in, particularly him talking about the mental health stuff. And to be honest, when all the Meghan stuff happened, I was definitely interested in her because she was so different. And of course, you know, being a woman of colour and all that stuff. But I didn't really feel I had massive skin in the game until I just saw how the press just went berserk. And I suppose just then a sense of, and I get their privilege and I get that she's a princess and, you know, I should be caring about other people who are more marginalised in society, etc., etc. However, the blatant unfairness and the hypocrisy and the double standards, I was kind of just blown away. So I ended up defending them a lot. I hadn't ever met them at this point. I didn't really have, wasn't like massively, hugely, you know, that keen on them. I just thought it was really, really unfair and total double standards from the press. So I think I sort of supported them before I met them, and then I happened to like them when I met them.
Because I think there are two parts of that, and that one part is with Meghan, it's like you have to sympathise with the vilification that she got from the press here, and that is just something that she couldn't have been prepared for. And then watching the interview, you're like, God, no one inside was helping her while she was really suffering. But then there is, you know, Harry is the child of Diana, and I said to Dad yesterday, before the interview had aired, I do think for my generation, Meghan is a sort of Diana figure in that she's an outlier. She's trying to go against the grain and she's exposing these things. And actually, in some ways, in a much more impactful way, like with what they're doing now. But you feel for both of them on individual counts, which I think is really, it's quite a strong emotion. And that's why especially young people are really coming to defend them. Like, you know, me and my friends were saying we just completely forgot of all of the mishaps that Harry did because now he's kind of really changed his image. But was there anything in that that you felt this is really going to have a long lasting effect on the royal family?
Oh, there was loads. Look, I don't think it was all perfect. I mean, some of it was like those shots in the sort of organic chicken coop were just like, oh my God, like so cringe. And, you know, was at one point when they were like, you know, they're all super woke and organic. It's like, what was Archie's first word? And he was like, hydrate or something like that. It was like,
I know.
Quinoa or like hydration or something. And I was just like, kombucha. I was like, you know, come on, guys, like really. But there were moments.
Aisha, do you want to know what Grace's first words were? Gary Nettle. It's a true story. Because the boy, Rory used to just read football stories to her. Gary Nettle.
Sorry, do you remember any
of
that?
No, I agree. Those bits were super. And when she compared herself to the Little Mermaid.
Oh, yeah, that was awful. The other thing, just following the comedy thing, the other thing that just really did crack me up, you know, the trailer that they sort of put out, even though it was like really serious, the music was so funny. It was that like hysterical music, you know, it was like Mild Peril and kind of thing. It was the same music they used for like Married at First Sight Australia. I was like, this is not appropriate music. But genuinely, Grace, there were moments, right? You know, I'm a, you know, cynic, worked a long time with your dad, you know me for a long time. I don't get that shocked. I think I sort of have seen most things, but there were moments where I was genuinely, I was like, wow. The bit when she was describing her mental health and how fragile she felt, and if she hadn't gone out that night, she was genuinely worried about herself. The fact she didn't get any help from the palace. And then Harry's body language when he was asked about that discussion about the skin colour of Archie.
About race.
Oh my God. Right, a lot of commentators are downplaying this, going, no. They were just having a lovely wee chat about whether the baby was going to have a lovely wee curly hair. My niece and nephews are biracial, right? And they're, you know, when you're having a conversation about how cute they're going to look compared to the reaction that he, you know, his body language was like, clearly this was a really bad conversation that happened. I was really, really shocked by that.
You know, can I just say, Ashley, you know, I think I sent you your index entry for Volume 8, which is coming out soon. And there's a really interesting bit where I'm talking to the government about previous volumes of diaries covering the Diana's funeral. And there was one bit at the last meeting before the day before the funeral where the guy in charge suddenly sort of clapped his hands like this and he went, well, ladies and gentlemen, the die is cast. And around the table, half of the room thought, oh my God, I cannot believe he said that. The die is cast. Oh my God. Right? It was like a horrible play on words. And the other half of the room just thought he meant the die is cast. It's all done. The planning's over. That's it. There's no going back on what we've done. And I think sometimes you can get this sort of, you know, people look at things, see things in different ways. And what I have really not enjoyed about the last 48 hours is this. That's why I asked you about taking sides, is this sense of, you know, people just want to feel rage one way or the other. And it sort of does my head in.
But just on that, the one thing I'd slightly push back on that, I think one of the reasons why it has enraged a lot of people, and I probably am on the kind of enraged side of things, and I try and be quite calm about things. I do think if you are a person of colour, and particularly a woman of colour, this you've seen this story play out. Like, you have I've experienced this stuff myself. I mean, Grace as a young woman may have experienced some of this. There is a particular thing. And I just think why this moment is so unique is this story is not new, okay? And everybody knows that they are the establishment and, you know, they do things in a certain way. But what makes the story unique is, for the first time, and I mean this in my lifetime, we've seen a woman of colour stand up to the bullies. Like, normally that never, ever, ever happens. And if you try and put your head above the parapet and you stand up to the bullies, like, you either get a mark against your name, you never work again, or you get absolutely crushed. And she has been absolutely audacious from that point of view, along with Harry supporting her and them doing it together. And I think that's why, Grace, your comments earlier about how so many of your generation really see her as an outlier and something. I think for me, as a person of colour, it is like, we've never really seen this happen before. So I do understand, you know, Alistair, you are right. People are taking sides because they feel like they're taking sides on a bigger kind of moral issue that nobody in this country has really talked about for a long, long, long time. We've talked about overt racism, but this kind of institutional racism, which, yes, back from the McPherson report, we started to kind of talk around it. This has blown the whole thing open, plus all the, you know, the work that you've done and you and I have worked together on the press and all this stuff. This one woman has come along and she's had the balls to just do the things that so many people have never, ever done. She's kind of exploded the whole thing. And I think that's why people are taking sides. But they're not so much taking sides in a petty, oh, I just want to take... It's not football, you know, the footballification of politics. It's like on a sort of very deeply personal level.
I think...
And it's such a complex issue, because, Dad, you could say that people take sides on kind of everything now. That's just how the world and social media is set out. Like that, you could apply that to loads of issues that happen. But this involves race, it involves class, it involves being a woman, it involves the media, it involves mental health. I mean, it's exploded so many different conversations in the last few days that I don't think... And I think people will be split. There were parts of that interview that I found too indulgent and kind of, you know, self-obsessed, and too sort of celebritization. But then there were other parts that, just like Aisha said, I watched and just thought, this is so powerful to watch and to think about and to see this one woman who's pregnant, who's heavily pregnant.
But Alistair, can I ask you one question as well? I mean, you've had a lot to do with the palace at, like, you know, such a moment of crisis in terms of when Diana died. Do you think there is any, do you think there is the will and the capacity for the palace to genuinely modernise and change and soften and become a bit more humane?
The short answer is yes, if they have to. And, you know, I wrote about the Queen in the book I wrote about winning. And I think what's really interesting about the Queen and the monarchy generally, they do have an incredible capacity for survival. And they're guided by this prince, that line from the famous Italian book, The Leopard, you know, nothing, everything changes so that nothing changes at all. And they're just this very, very, they'll change if they have to, but you'll hardly notice it when they do. And they would argue that they have changed hugely. I mean, I think even, you know, William, and one of the things I find most troubling about this whole thing, about their reaction, William and Harry William and Harry and Kate having done the Heads Together campaign was fantastic for the mental health agenda. Now along comes this, and there's sort of, you know, the central message is that inside the palace there's no help. So I think they will change, but I think it'll be very, very subtle and we won't notice it.
But don't you think so much of their, like, the way that they've sustained this period is because of the Queen? And when Charles takes over, it will be surely, because that chapter you did, sorry, just to plug your book Winners again for the third time, I think, so far in this podcast. in that chapter, you actually said that it was mainly the Queen, that it was, you wrote that chapter about the Queen more than the monarchy, didn't you? And that it was Queen.
No, what they did was they slimmed down actually to take out from the public space a lot of the lesser royals and focus very much more on Queen, Philip, Charles and William. That was the big thing. And then it was just these constantly these themes of service. That's why I wonder whether Harry and Meghan talking about doing service in a different way is part of the pushback. But I also think that, you know, people say it'll all change when the Queen goes, and it will obviously be a massive moment for the country. But I just think they find a way of adapting. And I'll tell you the other thing. I've written this piece for Tortoise, and Peter. I was talking to Peter Morgan recently, The Crown, right? And he was reminding me, back in the 90s, he was watching this for his research. You used to have television programmes, debates about the future of the monarchy. You had MPs like Willie Hamilton, who just made his name on attacking the royal family, right? Nobody does it anymore. They've won. And I think that when, you know, the Queen is no longer with us, I suspect they'll just adapt into this. And I don't think they'll do much in response to this. I think this is more of a frenzy than it is a crisis, and that it will kind of calm down and go away.
Aisha, do you think that they'll, because obviously all of the covers of the papers today are about whether or not the palace will respond on the racism claims. Do you think they will?
I think they should, but I think very depressingly, I think Alistair's probably right, and I feel pretty like distressed about that. Because I do think the royal family can be a force for good. And I think there's so much affection for the Queen. And this is, I think, the thing. This is why I don't know if I quite agree with you, Alistair, but I suppose we're not going to know. Time is going to tell. I feel like the Queen, just because of her sheer length, she is so unique in terms of just her sheer length of service. She is this golden thread that takes us back through modern British history, from Churchill to where we are today. I mean, she is a completely unique historical figure. She's a precious figure. And there is almost something weirdly magical about her, because she has, you know, who can you meet that span that amount of time? And funny enough, you mentioned The Crown. I mean, The Crown has made a whole generation of people, even though they didn't like the Queen, completely respect her and have this unbelievable sense of, you know, admiration. Her, you know, it's completely painted her in a different light. And also, she comes across it, I mean, she doesn't come across perfect, but she does come across as a woman who has at least got some capacity to be self-aware and reflect on the institution and see where it sits with the currents of society.
So what did you find depressing?
I find it depressing when you said that you don't think that the palace will just see this as a frenzy and not actually want to address it. Because I do think that when she passes, I think there's going to be a... Look, this country's changing, right? The demographics of this country are changing. There's a whole generation of people, which Meghan was like some attraction, right? But Meghan's wedding, right? I had so many young women of colour who, you know, normally will not interact with me on anything like this. This is amazing. I'm really interested in the royal family now. This is blowing my mind. Do you know, for a lot of people, that wedding meant more to them than the Olympic ceremony. Like, there was that pride. There was a total, for a lot of young people, a lot of people of colour, that was a really big moment of pride. And if the palace just say, and Alistair may well be right, they go, oh, storm in the teacup, it will blow over. I think that is going to disappoint a generation.
I don't think they'll do that. I think that, but what they won't do is come out and say, this bit of the interview was true, that bit wasn't true. This is who we think she means, but actually this is what they said. They won't do any of that stuff. But I think what you'll see, part of the Queen's whole approach is kind of show, not tell. And so it's like, you know, she's on social media, but she's on social media looking like she's always looked. She just moves with the times very, very gradually. So I think you'll probably start to see possibly more black people getting appointed to the palace jobs, starting from a very, very, very low base. You might start to see when the sort of military that are surrounding them, that maybe, so that's the kind of thing that they do. You might see it in the choice of visits that they do. But what I don't think you'll see is them diving into this frenzy, because they will think that all they'll do if they do that is keep it going.
Well, I think if they did a sort of point by, I completely agree with you. I think doing a rebuttal sort of thing would be absolutely terrible. But at some point, I think people will expect her, whether it's a very gentle gesture, whether it's something which is somehow you're almost reading between the lines, I think at some point she is going to have to address this a bit, you know. Remember when she did that, what was that famous bit, was Anna's horrible speech, where she did that speech, you know, when everything had gone wrong, there was a fire at Windsor and, you know, Fergie and Andrew, you know, and she, at some point, I think she'll have to make a nod to it.
Well, she's very good at that. I mean, it's like, you know, she does give little nods, like during the Scottish referendum when she said, you know, I hope people think very carefully. And it was such an obvious thing to say, I hope people think very carefully. But it was kind of, it was seen as a big statement. And I, you know, I think for the next bit, Fiona, Grace's mum, was just saying, God, how long is this going to go on? It's going to go on for a long time, because the first time William's seen in public, the first time Kate's seen in public, the first time the Queen's in public, all of these things are going to be big moments now because of what's happened in the last few days. And how they manage them, that's where you'll see whether there's any subtle change. But I think it will only be subtle.
Yeah, but I mean, I also do keep thinking about the fact that they've literally completely ignored everything regarding Prince Andrew. And so they are very good at just pretending things aren't happening to the outside world.
But
so
also
that, you know, it's very likely that that's the avenue they're going to go down, where they will just try not to even give it any attention in the hope that people will move on. And maybe they will, maybe they won't. But what I agree with you on, I agree with you on everything, Aisha, but it is really different for my generation, because I don't see her as someone who's just decided that this is what her intention was, to break up the monarchy. I think she, her intentions were good, and I actually think she's a really kind person. She's just also been kind of fucked over by the system that she married into. So it's a really generational thing.
Well, the point is, though, that neither you nor mum know.
Of course not, but don't you think that to say that about a mixed race woman, there are so many different layers to it when you decide that this woman had different intentions than just wanting to marry this person and coming into this family, and it went terribly wrong because
I'll tell you what I do.
A lot to do with her race and the media and the way that that was treated.
I'll tell you what I do really hate is this sort of people questioning other people's motivations when they talk about what's going on inside their heads, you know. So people who don't like it, it's people who didn't like her already, the minute she said she had suicidal thoughts, it's like, you made it up, you know. I mean, that I find just horrible and horrific, and that's what I mean about
the rage. Let's call it out. It wasn't, you know, I think this is why as well. This is now exploded. This story is detonated, right? It's not just about the palace. It is a bigger question about society. It's a bigger question about the media. And what you've just described, Alistair, is pretty shocking. But let's name that person. I mean, that was Piers Morgan, who, Piers Morgan this morning, basically, or was it yesterday, just completely ridiculed the idea that this person had, you know, suicidal thoughts. I mean, is that really where things have got? Like, in, you know, is that where we are? I don't know. Do you know, one of the things I just feel really, really, like, genuinely saddened about, I think this country's gone nuts, right? I think this country has gone nuts, actually, pre-Brexit. I think you can whisk it back to the post-financial crash, Scottish referendum. Since then, I think this country's gone nuts in a really, really bad way. Mm. And I just feel like I'm 45... I remember growing up, sort of a bit of racism growing up. Things genuinely really got better in my 20s into my 30s. Mm. And now I just feel we live in a very cold climate again. We live in a really uncompassionate, quite nasty, polarised, like quite venal sort of society. And it's just like, how has this happened? Like, what the hell has happened to us as a society? And I think that's another reason why this story is upsetting so many people, because it's kind of holding a mirror up to all of that stuff. And I was doing some shows on LBC. This was like, God, this is like, I don't know, maybe 2016, 2017, maybe 2017, 2018, 2019, when, let's be honest, the Brexit discourse was going absolutely nuts in this country as well. And I remember doing a couple of phone-ins on Meghan Markle, and the racism, the absolute off the scale, unhinged racism, hatred, I just feel that, like, all of this stuff has kind of collided in this really frightening, toxic way. Like, we genuinely did. I'm never saying this place was perfect. I'm sure my parents, when they came over, got their many of their own stories. But something's gone really, really rotten in this country over, like,
I usually know that the thing about the country going nuts, the country's been, the media has been nuts about the royals for decades. I mean, they've just, there's sort of diet of stuff around the royals, which, you know, they, and then I agree with you about the Scottish referendum and Brexit and all that. But I also think, by the way, that some of this is a backlash, just as I've always thought that Trump winning in America was partly the backlash against having Obama for 8 years. They then said, we've had a black guy, we're not having a woman. And I think that this kind of, you know, I mean, I don't even know what this woke word means, but this kind of anti-woke thing is like a backlash against, well, against I don't know what, against progress, actually. And people don't want it.
Yeah,
and
I think you're right. But then what does that mean? Is that I feel that the teachable, that from the sad, the really worrying thing is, it's not like anyone, I mean, as we said, everything's so polarised, but it's like, what do you do? Do you then have a situation where, like, okay, if you have the temerity to take one step forward, like elect a black man in America or allow a mixed race woman into the royal family, it then, it, like, it's okay to then just have this horrible backlash. Mm. Like, you know,
no, I'm not defending it. Go? I'm not defending it at all. I'm describing it, not defending it. But I think that's how progress is made. And, you know, sometimes it is two steps forward, one step back. You know, like we've got this, you've got racism going on. I was asked on The World at One, is the British media racist? That is, there is considerable racism in the British media. No doubt about that at all. And it helps them sell to some of them. It's about selling to their audience. But you've had the black light. Look at the Black Lives Matter thing. That comes and then, you know, the footballers are still taking a knee. You know, that's. So the debate develops and goes on in at a different pace. But, you know, I don't think we should think it's kind of, it's all going to hell in a handcart. And by the way, the thing about, yes, Piers is the most high profile person doing it. But I've got to be honest, I saw a lot of people on social media saying, oh, do me a favour, you know, pull the other one. I think it's all part of this kind of, you know.
Yeah, but none of them have. Yeah, I do think, I know you get annoyed when people get angry at Piers, but I'm not because you defend him. No, but you say, let's not talk about, let me finish. You say, let's not give him the time of day is what you say, right? That's what you said to me earlier. Let's not talk about Piers too much because we give him the attention he wants. You think, you know, he craves attention, which I understand. But I also think, like Aisha said, you have to name and shame these people constantly. And Piers probably encouraged a lot more people on social media to say stuff like that and then followed it through today by acting like a baby. And that's why this conversation we could talk about for hours, because there are so many different layers to it. And like you said, Aisha, it's confronted so many people's experiences of feeling like they've been shamed or silenced with their mental health, their race, whatever that may be. And that's why it's bringing up all of these feelings. But where, I mean, I'm going to ask you this, Aisha, but where do you think we will go now just to fight, I guess, finish up the Meghan Markle conversation? She's in America now. There, supposedly, this interview will be the big sort of pièce de résistance. Do you think they're going to carry on kind of campaigning in this way with the royal family? Do you think it will carry on having as much impact as it's had in the last few weeks?
My sense is that I think it's all so explosive that I think they'll probably take a step back for a while now. I think that, you know, they're going to probably just concentrate on doing their, you know, Archiewell thing. They've, you know, do their production work, get on with having a family. I think they'll keep their head down for a while. But I don't think this issue is going to go away because it's really, really messy. I would love to think that, you know, we could somehow have a happy ending where they become the symbols of our society and they come back together and it's kumbaya and everything's great. But I don't think that is going to happen. And I think that's true of the bigger issues we've just talked about. I think this very difficult, layered, complicated, divisive, messy issue is going to just sort of carry on. But this week, and I cannot underline this enough, and there's a big generational divide, there's a big race divide. For a lot of us who've grown up as second generation immigrants, our mum and dads, when you go to any immigrant house, we bloody love the royal family. We've got royal family crockery, right? All over the, I mean, I've got a queen, I've got a mug from, you know, the longest serving. We ethnic minorities, particularly the older generation, they love the queen, they love the royal family. And I think for quite a lot of that generation and their children, there is just a sort of feeling of quite like a lot of confusion and a lot of hurt about what's happened.
Yeah, no, I can see that. Listen, it's not. It's. I think it's. It will keep going. There's, and also you say they'll just get on with their Archwell work, but of course, that's really about media stuff. It's about you know they're going to be out there the whole time. I think, and no, I think it's going to get messy for a while. And don't forget, you've got Prince William and Prince Philip, very old in hospital. The Queen, I actually thought for the first time the other day, slightly looking her age. I don't know if you saw her in that Commonwealth. So, you know, you're talking about...
Mind you, I'm saying nothing. I look like Zelda from Terrorhawks at this point in, like,
no, you don't. You really don't.
Anyway, well, there we are. Should we talk about politics and Labour?
Yeah.
I think we should. Grace's mum had a question. She said, are you talking to Aisha? Ask her when the Labour Party is ever going to have a woman leader. I know we've had Harriet and Margaret as interims, but when is Labour going to get a woman leader, do you think?
Grace, I don't know. I genuinely don't know. And it's awful. I genuinely don't know. I don't think we're going to have one for a while.
How do you think Keir's doing?
So I think he's had phases. I think phase one was to deal with a lot of the internal stuff, sort out anti-Semitism, kind of cauterize the absolute kind of, you know, the fallen reputation that we had. I think he's done that very well. I think he has started to sort of clean out the stables, but that's not enough. Like, his sole thing can't just be, hey, his first thing was like, I'm not Jeremy Corbyn. And he's massively established the fact that he's not Jeremy Corbyn. But in many ways, that was like the easy bit. Like, that was the kind of easy bit. And now the really, really hard bit. Like, no one in the public really cares that much that he's not Jeremy Corbyn. It's like, okay, well, who are you? And I think this is the bit that I'm, you know, let's just be honest, we're struggling at the moment. The Labour Party, I think, is struggling. I think it's struggling not just with getting its message out, not just in terms of, you know, charisma, pizzazz. I think it's struggling with the fundamental question on the economy, which is the central issue right now. I think it hasn't defined what it wants to do and what its central ideology and what its central argument is, and that's a really big problem.
Yeah, I think Keir needs to do some more soul searching, but obviously he's already won. But I think I have this really strong sense of I don't think he knows who he is, and then that projects insecurity and self-doubt onto other people. So I think he needs to go and do ayahuasca or something with a shaman and just deep to his core and just really work out who he is in three words.
Grace, do you think he wouldn't...
Aisha, so when you were working for Ed Miliband, when he was leader of the Labour Party, and he kept dragging me into those bloody meetings that I would get very frustrated and quite agitated, and we'd try our best, but... Did you not feel, I mean, what Grace, I think, is saying is that despite Johnson being awful, the public is sort of making up their mind that this isn't going to work for Labour. Don't you think people thought that with Ed as well, and that he never got over that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think people have thought that about the Labour Party before pre-2010, you know, to be honest. And I think that... I think successive Labour leaders since probably Tony Blair, but I think, you know, lots of different things have happened since then. I think we cling to our past glories, right? I think we are frozen in political aspect. If you're like a sort of more of a sort of centrist or whatever you want to call it, I think our side is absolutely ridiculous now as well. I think we just like, we hark back to these glory days, you know, obviously, in your time, you know, the run up to the 1997 election, which, of course, was an incredible moment. But you can't just like live in the past the whole time. Like, where is our vision for now? This is the most, you know, it's a profoundly important moment. There is an opportunity to kind of, well, look, all the economic orthodoxies are sort of getting ripped up now. We see the Tories spending, you know, we see Rishi Sunak meeting out this budget that John McDonnell would have loved to have done. But of course, you know, we've got different answers for the for the long term. But I think, see, I slightly think, Grace, is I'm not sure if Keir has got time to go on a gap year to India to find himself.
He needs it.
He probably just doesn't have, he'd be like, guys, I'm just going, as soon as pandemic's over, I'm off to Goa with Grace.
It would help. And me and so Grace are heading off. Long right? term.
Grace, while he was there, would he do anything for the public? Would we know he was still leader of the Labour Party? Or was it a full
I honestly think it would be so much more worthwhile if he could just really, really go and do some soul searching. Truly. He needs to just take a tab of acid. I don't know.
I think he's more likely to take a tab of antacid. Like, I don't think he's going to be some of, like, you know, like, I think the chat. But Alistair, what do you think? What do you think?
You're the guest, Aisha. You're the guest.
Oh, God. So, no, that's not fair. That's not fair. I think here, I don't think there's a different person that should be leading the Labour Party now or anything. I think he's brilliant in many ways. I think he's a really, really decent man. But I do think Labour's got to, you know, get a grip of some of these bigger arguments.
No, because I'll tell you what my sort of thoughts briefly are that, you know, I was saying, Grace said to me the other day, how do you win an election? And I said, well, you have to attack your opponent properly. You have to project your own side properly. And you have to have policies that people say, yeah, I can see them as the government. And I think that what I really think Keir does have going for him in a way that Corbyn simply never had and Ed had intermittently is that people look at him and they can imagine him in Downing Street. I think he looks like he could be a prime minister and he sounds like he could be a prime minister. But I think Labour have been far too weak in attack on Johnson in particular over COVID and over Brexit. There's a timidity about the team that I find really strange. Very few of the shadow cabinet are known by anybody outside the sort of political world. And on the policy agenda, they seem to think that policy is about saying, this is what we would do if we're in power tomorrow. The policy agenda in opposition is about how you shape arguments to get to the election.
Mm.
And so I just think there's, and maybe it's because they have, you know, there aren't that many people in that team, in the shadow cabinet and in the PLP now, that have been around for a long time.
Aisha, when you were working for Ed, did it feel like, how much like the thick of it did it feel like?
Grace, every day was like the thick of it. I mean, literally, every day was like the, from everything, I mean, literally everything that could have gone wrong. Like, well, honestly, I did two stand-up shows based on my time working for Ed Miliband. Like, I remember when we put Ed on Twitter, right? He didn't even know what Twitter was. And there was a guy called Kenny, who was in charge of his Twitter account. And one day Ed comes in and Kenny is like absolutely free. Bob Holness has just died, right? The sort of game show. And Ed comes in, he's like, oh, hi, how's it all going? And Kenny's like, well, there's good news and there's bad news. And Ed's like, give me the good news. He's like, the good news is you're trending. And Ed's like, what's that? He's like, it means you've gone global. The bad news is I misspelt a tweet in your name and I've caused a lot of racial offence. And instead of saying, Kenny put a tweet going, oh, you know, Ed Miliband, huge condolences to Bob Holness, like this amazing host of Blackbusters instead of Blockbusters. Right, so literally every day was like that. You know, I mean, forget the bacon sandwich. Every day something. One day we went to Scotland to do an interview in like this local station and Ed's in the radio station in the booth. And a naked man just appears beside him. Just a naked man. Just naked, swinging all over, a lot of flesh, swinging around.
What did he want from Ed?
I don't know, Ed's like...
Grace, you've got a story about Ed Miliband and a naked man.
Yeah, well, so when we... This is what made me think of the thick of it and Ed. And I mean, I know politics is very the thick of it, but this... So we were in Glasgow just before the Scottish referendum, and I was... staying in a hotel with my dad, and I just left him and said, oh, I'm going out to see my friend. I'm walking through this hotel in Glasgow and I bump into Ed in the corridor and he says, oh, are you here with your dad? And I was like, yeah, my dad's asleep in his hotel room. And he said, I really need to talk to him. Can you go and wake him up? Because I need to talk to him. So I knock on the door. No, I had a key to your hotel room. I open the hotel door and dad's asleep in his boxers and Ed just goes and perches on the end of my dad's bed. wakes him up and just goes, you know, Alistair, how do you think we're doing? How do you think we're doing?
So Alistair, they wake up and there's literally Ed Miliband just like in the That is like the worst booty call ever, isn't it?
And do you remember, I was just going through the next diaries. Do you remember those TV debate rehearsals?
Oh.
I was a bit brutal, wasn't I?
Okay, your dad was such a nightmare. So, like, we were doing these... But it was, like, cathartic for, like, your dad. Alistair literally was, like, letting it all out. He's like, and another thing, you utter fucker! And another fucking thing! And then we have fucking, you fucking shitbag! And all this kind of thing. And then was like, oh. And then afterwards, Ed was, like, destroyed psychologically. And we had to be like, Alistair... The point of these debates is to try and build up his confidence, not beat him to a pulp.
No, I didn't swear. I decided, and I was right, by the way. I said Cameron will go relentlessly on the whole point about the mess we inherited, which Ed and I had argued about for years. Anyway, we had some good fun.
We did. Although, I was a very good Nicola Sturgeon.
You were a good Nicola Sturgeon.
Oh, I love that.
And
I was a really...
Ed was Ed. I was Cameron. Aisha was...
Who was
Nick Clegg again?
It was Theo. No, that was with Gordon. Who was Nick Clegg? Oh, God, I can't remember. And then Elinard was Leanne from Blight.
She couldn't make it, and this man called Mark Steers, because he was vaguely Welsh, had to be Leanne. And he put on this really effeminate Welsh accent, and he just kept going, in Wales. And it was just like, what are you doing? He'd be like, in Wales, we really care about people. Like, oh, so he's not Pakistani, he's just got really bad Welsh accent. Just like, it was just like, what are you doing?
Oh my God. Aisha, would you ever go back and do that again?
Oh God, yeah, I'd definitely go and help people again, you know, because doing stuff like that, it's a great privilege to do it. And also, you know, I kind of love
doing
that.
A lot of fun, it sounds.
It is a lot of fun. But interestingly, it is, Alistair, it is a huge amount of fun. But what you just touched on there when you said that you and Ed sort of, you know, had a row over some of those fundamentals, what you see in those debate prep things, you know, and it goes back to PMQ prep. And I interviewed your dad for the book that Tom Hamilton and I wrote on PMQ's Punch and Judy Politics. You know, you've got to thrash out, and it kind of loops back to Labour thing. You do have
Thomas
to start
Clegg.
Thrashing out these... Oh, yes, Thomas Clegg. That's right, Thomas Clegg. You've got to kind of start thrashing out some of these arguments now, because it's almost too late to wait when you're going into... If you're in debate prep, right, you're in the run-up to the short campaign, you've got to... I think, Alistair, you said to us that you have to use PMQs as a sort of strategic anvil to start seeding and testing these messages. Mm. Because the you crashed the car and the long-term economic plan, Cameron and Osborne started dropping those phrases into PMQs from, like, 2 weeks into the... They use that as like a testing ground to see how these messages work. They refine them. How did they? So by the time you get to the short campaign, these messages have been tested in PMQs. They've been tested. You do have to have these kind of fundamental arguments now, really.
Yeah. And Grace, the big argument we were having, I had with Ed, it went on for years, was that I felt that because Ed was trying to differentiate himself from Tony and Gordon, he wasn't defending the new Labour record. And that allowed the Tories to say that we'd achieved nothing and we were responsible for the crash. And, I hate to say it, but I really do think it could have been different. I think if Labour had really, really, really stood up for our record, not in a kind of let's look back to the past, I agree with what Aisha said about that, but actually stood up for the record and said Labour governments do more for people than Tory governments do. And we ceded that whole ground. We've never got it back.
And then set that up for Corbyn to then...
Absolutely. Corbyn comes in after, you know, there's really, in this book, which ends in 2015, Corbyn's only in it once, and it's right at the end when he and I are in a radio studio together on the day that Ed resigns. And the idea at that moment that Corbyn would be the next leader is just incredible. But that's what happened within days. Incredible.
But Alistair, do you just two things quickly in terms of that argument about not defending the record, which I do accept as an argument, and I think that is something we should have done more of. But given that we had lost the 2010 general election, and again the economy was a central issue, was it not a case that the public just didn't buy our arguments that we were better on all these things? We were making those arguments in the run up to the 2010 general election campaign, but they just didn't work with the electorate. The voters didn't trust us.
No, I don't. You mean Gordon's election?
Yeah, Yeah, 2010, and then that took us into Ed's sort of period of time.
I think by the time Gordon was in charge, I think, you know, we'd been in power a long time, he'd had the crash, and I could see, and actually I thought Gordon did pretty well to stop Cameron getting a majority, but I felt that what happened then for the next 5 years, as the coalition came in, is that you ended up with this kind of strange alliance of Labour distancing themselves from Labour's record, the Tories saying that Labour caused the crash, the Tory media is saying that we never achieved anything, and you end up with the public thinking, well, if nobody's speaking up for... And I wasn't doing... I think Ed always thought this was me sort of feeling very proud about our record, and it wasn't. I actually felt that it was a strategic mistake for him not to be making that message that... And the message for the crash for me was, you know, the crash was caused by these right-wing bastards in America... greedy right wing, basically, if they were British, they'd be Tories. And that's what caused the banking crisis. That's what spread around the globe. And this is the only country in the world where you've got a government saying it was all caused by the current opposition. I think he could have stood up against it. But anyway, you know, it's all gone.
And in terms, in terms of this whole economic argument, do you think that with Biden doing this big, big, big stimulus package in America and, you know, everyone's on this build back better sort of mantra, do you think Labour should be more bold about the economics of this and say, no, we don't have to have a conversation about balancing the books now? It's more important to sort of, while we can borrow more to invest properly in the economy, do a labour economy which will benefit women, it'll benefit the low paid, it'll nourish public services. Should that be the argument, or should we still be trying to track the Tories?
No, I think you're right.
Be cautious.
I think Biden does change the game. And look, the Tories are spending so much and borrowing so much money now. But I do think, you talked earlier about the future vision, and actually, this is where I think Ed was good on this whole sort of green revolution thing. So I think that you've got to win that economic message, but it's got to be about a different sort of economy with a different sort of purpose. And I feel at the moment, I totally agree with what you were saying, we're trapped in the way we talk about ourselves in a world that I think Grace's generation has already moved on from.
Yeah. I mean, Grace, how do you think Labour's doing?
Not well. I mean, coming back to, I think it's they feel lost. I mean, look, as someone who's had to listen to conversations about this since I was like a child, I'm well aware of where it's all gone wrong. But I think now, I just don't feel Keir's doing a good enough job of cutting through. And I don't think he's doing a good enough job of making it really obvious that he's holding Boris Johnson to account, of calling them out on their many, 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 many fuck-ups up until now and carrying on with COVID. Like, I just think it's been really weak leadership, and I'm not really sure I buy the excuse of, well, you know, the world's different now, so it's much harder to do that, because actually I think there are people who are cutting through in the media at the moment. Keir just isn't one of them, and that's what makes me worry that, like, genuinely I don't think he really knows what it is he's trying to do.
Right, just in case Keir's listening and his confidence is now on the floor, I think Aisha should give us another thick of it moment from Ed.
But also, Keir, if you are listening, I will happily do magic mushrooms with you.
In India, in Goa.
In Goa. Well, look, it's not all, look, I don't know, I mean...
Oh, it's pretty grim, Aisha. I mean, this is the worst government of our lifetime. Johnson is truly awful. 130,000 people dead. The economy absolutely, you know, disaster zone. Corruption galore in the whole COVID thing. Brexit, total disaster, and nobody talks about it.
Oh, my God. Well, this is meant to be a light-hearted podcast.
Yeah, exactly. Give us another. Tell us. Give it. Do do another impersonation of Ed as he's eating the bacon.
Okay, okay. I'll do the classic Ed story. Poor Ed, if you're listening to this, your confidence is probably on the
floor. We love Ed.
Okay, this is my classic Ed story, and this is the PMQ story, which is, as Alistair knows, it was my job to help, like, kind of keep Ed, like, help him prep for PMQs and TV debates and things. And he would get really stressed out every Wednesday morning ahead of PMQs. Like, he would get so, so stressed out. And, like, one Wednesday morning, we prepared all these really good questions on the badger cull. And we were, like, in really good shape. And then he's fussing around and he's rushing to the toilet and he's on his phone texting the entire shadow cabinet. He keeps running his hands through his hair, which is lovely and dark, with that little bit of white kind of going down the centre of it. And we're just about to go into the chamber and he whips around and grabs me by my lapels and he's like, oh, my God, Aisha, I've got to ask you something. And I'm like, oh, my God. What is it? I was like, is it something to do with our like deficit reduction plan? He's like, honestly, it's like way more important than that. And I was like, oh my God, is it something that Ed Balls has said? He's like, honestly, shh, and listen and look at me and answer me this question. Am I a badger? And I was like, what? He's like, honestly. And then he was like, get Ed Balls. Are you sure? Just get Ed Balls. So Ed Balls comes flying into the room behind the speaker's chair. His tie's like this. He's like, and Ed's like, Ed, we've known each other a long time. You and me, we go back a long way. Look me in the eye and answer me this question. He's like, am I a badger? <He's> like, and Ed Balls is looking at me and Tom Hamilton going, what the fuck is going on? What the actual, is he having like a breakdown? Like, what the fuck is going on? And we're going.
So what, was he worried that he asking about badgers and the Tories would say he looks like a badger?
Yeah, because
well, because that, of the white bit of hair.
Because of the white bit of hair.
Yeah. Somebody put that thought in his head, though.
Well, it's funny because when you were telling that story and you described the white bit of hair, I was like, God, if now I'm thinking, is he a badger?
But what's really funny is when he was up at Edinburgh at the same time as that, because he loves that story and I've told it many times. But he did his show with Jeff, his lovely show.
Yeah.
They actually did have a section where they brought this massive thing on screen and it was a whole section called Am I a Badger? So he does really own it now. And every time there's a story about the badger cull, I'm like, God, I wish Ed was like the shadow, like kind of minister for the environment right now. Cause I really want to have him talking about the badger cull.
Now, listen, Aisha, your employers would give you a kick up the arse if you didn't promote Times Radio on this in this podcast.
So yes.
Do you get more back to this sort of whole thing about women, woman of colour? Do you get more abuse on social media than your male counterparts doing the same job? Have you checked?
Yes.
You do, definitely, as a matter of fact. Okay.
Yes.
And
yes.
On the... And then the next thing I want to ask you is, how is Times, without giving me any sort of PR bullshit spin, how's Times Radio doing?
Oh, I don't actually, the answer to that is I don't actually know how it's doing. I haven't seen any figures. I don't think we've had any figures through yet. So I genuinely don't know the answer to that question. I think they're kind of taking a year to 2 year view before I think they're going to really sort of look at the numbers. I think they're trying to bed it in. But, and this is no spin, I mean, it's a great place to work. I get a lot of freedom. I mean, I get 6 hours of airtime. Saturday, I was just shaking his head going, I can't believe they've given you 6 hours of airtime. He's like, why? But it's great, and I get to shape my own shows, and it's you know, I really, really enjoy it. And I get a lot of, oh, you know, you're terrible working for these people, but I genuinely, there's no editorial line I ever, you know, get, as long as, you know, we give people like a fair, you know, interview, and that's the main thing.
And what do you think of this GB News coming down the track?
Again, I feel like because there was a lot of hysteria about Times Radio before it started, and everybody was like, oh my God, this is going to be horrific. It's going to be like Fox Radio. And actually, if anything, people complain it's like Remainer Radio because it's So that's why I until I actually see it, I don't know. Having been yeah. through the Times Radio stuff, let's see.
Cool. Okie dokie, well, I enjoyed that.
Well, that was a real laugh, Aisha. Thank you so much for letting us chat to you.
Well, thank you so much for allowing me on this illustrious podcast.
So what, when we recorded that podcast, mm-hmm. Alistair Campbell.
Yes, Grace Campbell.
Piers Morgan had stormed off the set of Good Morning Britain, mm-hmm. but then later that evening, he quit, we all know, got the sack. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then somebody sent me the clip from The Apprentice, when you did The Apprentice with him, yeah. and then he got fired. And then again. You said, again, mm. and you should have tweeted that clip yesterday.
Maybe I should, but I wouldn't know how to do that.
I know, but I'm just saying it's like that man, right? So obviously very, very deserved. He'll go somewhere else, more right wing, where he'll be watched by less people.
Fewer
people. And it'll be not a mainstream platform. Like,
listen, he will bounce back. I've actually spoken to him today.
I don't want that in the podcast.
Well, it's not up to you. You can't just cancel my conversation with
Piers. Why have you spoken to him?
Because, because I think there's a big thing going on and I'm talking about it and I want to know what's going on. Secondly, I remember, just so you know, for example, I've had a lot of ups and downs with Piers. We've fallen out a lot. He's an attention seeker, he's a narcissist and all that stuff, right? But he's also got... And I just can't stand this thing about you either have to hate somebody or love them, right?
No, but you're not giving even the topic of what he'd said about
wait
suicide.
A minute. No, I have done that and I've talked
about
it.
Well, say
that
on here.
Well, we've talked about that with Aisha. My point is that he actually can be a very kind guy. He is very funny. And yes, he's completely.
You could say
up
that about
this.
Loads of people, though. Yeah, I'm sure Donald Trump's kind to some people.
No, but yeah, and like I fell out with Piers over his. It's Trump, you know, period and what have you. My point is, I can't stand this thing where you only have to love or hate, right? It's more life is more complicated.
I'm aware of that. Don't explain that to me like
I'm
stupid.
No, so let me say, for example, that when I've had real difficulties in my life, so for example, when David Kelly died, so for example, you know, when finally I'd sort of decided I'd had enough and I left and other stuff that's happened since then, I would say Piers is always kind of one of those people who kind of, you know, just, I'm not saying it's a big thing or a small thing, but he's one of those guys who doesn't dump you, right? So I just think...
Yeah, but, okay, that's fine. And that's your personal relationship that you have with him. I think you should just
Yeah, so don't say to me, I don't want it on my podcast, that you spoke to Piers Morgan.
Okay, but don't explain things to me like I'm stupid.
Well, you know, I think sometimes...
No,
because
you're not listening to, that's fine. You have a personal relationship with this man, so that's fine, right? You know, lots of people had personal relationships with historically bad people, and so I guess they would have stuck by them. Piers will go down in this period as someone who instigated a lot of hate towards a lot of minorities. That is just a fact. And I don't think it's very good to align yourself with people like that. That's fine if he's been loyal.
I'm not aligned with anybody. Look, he's somebody that I've known for about, you know, 30-odd years.
Longer than you've known me?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, way longer.
So you like him more than you like me?
Well, obviously, yeah. I mean, you know, I wish you lived with me. No, Grace. This is what's so ridiculous about the way the debate's gone these days. And this is what gets on my
nerves. Because you're verging into this anti-woke culture brigade right now, which is what Piers...
No, I'm proud to be woke.
Well, you're not being very woke by saying that the only reason you're talking to Piers is because you think that the world's gone too far.
No, I didn't say that. He went too far.
Yeah, okay.
He went too far.
He did.
And he lost his job. I think that is...
Did he lose his job?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he did.
Yeah.
I mean, no, he probably decided in the end, I don't want, you know, you obviously don't want me to be what I'm being or whatever. So anyway, I don't know about that.
Yeah.
I don't really care. What I do think is when somebody, you know, is in the shit, you can... Listen, if Boris Johnson was in the shit tomorrow, I'd pile on him like nothing, right? But if somebody's in the shit and get a bit of trouble, I think there's nothing wrong in saying, listen, I hope you're okay. That's all I said.
Okay, but he hasn't done that for loads of women that he's he's abused.
Yeah, but
you know,
I'm not him. I'm me.
I get that. I'm just saying it would have been nice for him to do that to women like Jameela Jamil, who nearly killed herself because of the abuse he gave her after Caroline Flack died. Mm. You know, he's played a huge part in the downfall of
these... And I said to that to him on air many times.
Okay. anyway. So, look, we love each other and we're best friends,
well,
right?
No, I'm not sure about that. Because one, you made a very inappropriate joke about Prince Harry. that was way, way over the top, which I may even cancel for that. I'm not doing the podcast with you next week.
Okay.
Unless you get Prince Harry.
Anyway, Aisha or was brilliant, wasn't she? Aisha was brilliant.
Aisha is funny. Aisha was... People don't probably know that before she went into politics and the media, she was a stand-up comic.
Because when I first knew, I didn't know her as a stand-up, first and foremost.
And then she went out with somebody who worked for me for quite a long time,
mm-hmm.
Ben. We did have... And it's good she can laugh about it because, you know... Did I mention the volume 8 of the diaries, which are coming out at the end of this month?
I think we can say that just one more time.
Yeah, I think I did. So it's called The Rise and Fall of the Olympic Spirit, but it does cover that period you talk about with these debates when I was Cabral and Ed was Ed. And I mean, some of them, I was over the top sometimes. But I think you've got to be in those things. I really went for him over. There was one terrible bit where we were sitting there, Aisha was there and... All Ed's team were there, and there's Ed and I at two podiums, and Ed's Ed and I'm Cameron. And the question was, can the two leaders tell us what's the most difficult decision you've ever made in your life? And I, as Cameron, say, well, sending forces into Libya and, you know, sort of da, 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 da. And Ed said something like, you know, well, the most difficult decisions I make are the ones I make about the policies we have to develop to meet the interests of the working people, da, da, da. And I then said, oh, for heaven's sake, this guy can't even say what a difficult decision is. And that's because the only difficult decision he's ever made was how deeply to stick the knife into the back of his brother.
Oh, my gosh.
And they all went,
Oh my god!
I think it might have been Aisha said he wouldn't say that. I said Aisha, he would. You're dealing with Tories here; they'll say and do
anything.
Did they
say stuff like that in the debates?
They not in the debate. No,
it's kind of un-British politics to do stuff like that.
I was going over the top like you and Piers do. I was learning from you and Piers about how to go a bit over the top, just to sort of help him train.
Okay, darling. Well, I love you very much and I hope you have a wonderful life.